This week on Dueling Review, Deceased, number one. Ooh, scary kids. From DC Comics, a mysterious technovirus has been released on Earth, infecting 600 million people and turning them instantly into violent, monstrous engines of destruction. The heroes of the DCU are caught completely unprepared for a pandemic of this magnitude and struggle to save their loved ones first. But what happens to the world's greatest heroes if the world ends? Deceased number one. Hey, thank you, patrons, for picking this book for us to read this week. Everybody's talking about it because now finally, well, asterisks by that. We'll come back around to this in a moment. Finally, DC gets to tell a DC zombie story. And I think it starts in a fairly good way, right? I mean, it starts at some point in time where the Justice League fights Darkseid, but Darkseid's like, okay, I'll go back home. I got what I needed anyway. Turns out that it's Vic Stone, Cyborg, and he's got the second half of the anti-life equation, and Darkseid combines it with the regular equation, and Desaad's like, no, don't do that. It could go out of control. You don't know how these things work. And then suddenly it explodes, and Darkseid's infected, and he rips his head off, and then Desaad freaking out sends Cyborg back to Earth, and because Cyborg's connected to the internet, Matthew, the virus spreads quickly to every social media outlet in the world, and 600 million people are infected, and suddenly we have a zombie outbreak. I will say this about Tom Taylor. If the original Night of the Living Dead, or even the remake of Night of the Living Dead, Day of the Dead, was all about consumerism, Tom Taylor has got a mad hate for social media and the infection and the mindlessness that occurs and the outrage that occurs when people get on the social medias.
It's possible. I mean, as far as vectors for infection go, it's at least something fresh. You know, usually it's, you have to be bitten. Terrible.
We'll see how that plays out because Batman, you know, because he's Batman, nukes the Wayne Manor so that no internet or electronic signals can come in or out. But it's too late because the good Robin and Dick Grayson have already been infected. And as Batman is fighting them off, he gets bitten. So does this mean that Batman, through the bite of an infection, not through social media, is going to also turn into a face-ripping off zombie man?
I think so, because early in the issue, they give us a little bit of foreshadowing that this is 90s-style Batman who has, you know, plans to take down all of his partners and may possibly have a bug somewhere on Superman. And I think what we are going to get first is zombie Batman with full control of his bat abilities.
You think?
Being all zombie bat and using his fail-safe attacks on all of the rest of the
league. Because the way that they portray these zombies is that they're all under the control of anti-death or whatever it is, anti-life. But is it anti-life? It's not really anti-life because it's like the black racer comes in and Darkseid's like, oh, I'm going to take a little bit of your anti-death and I'm going to mix it with this anti-life equation and create something that's totally different. So we also get a little bit of meddling in God's domain type things.
Yeah, about, and it's you shouldn't mess done with it. By gods, which is fun.
I know, right?
And I have to say the point where Darkseid realizes that, arg, I am terrible and awful, and he leaps into the fire pit and blows up Apocalypse.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of neat. I mean, that's not something that we've seen 100,000 times before.
But I do. There's another moment in here that I kind of got a kick out of, especially if this is supposed to be a horror book in the vein of a zombie thriller, right? So Damien and Jonathan are playing video games. And of course, this virus is spreading through the phone. And Lois is in the apartment with him. And she's like, where's my phone? Where's my phone? And Jonathan's like, yeah, Damien, where's the phone? He's like, how do I know? You're the world's greatest detective. Maybe you should put down the controller and look. And Damien's like, you got X-ray vision. You could just scan the room. And then he does, and you see the phone, and he's reaching out for it, and he's like, oh, Mom, I found your phone,
and
he's holding
it. Red.
And he holds it up, and he's moments away from looking at it when all of a sudden Superman comes in and fries the thing. Is like, don't turn off the TV. Don't look at social media. Ah, the big media agenda is going to kill us all.
Okay, I'm leaving the show.
That was probably, to be honest, that was the most thrilling moment of the issue. Two parts. The part, like you said, when Darkseid rips off his head and goes jumping into the fire pits of Apocalypse. And then that scene where Jonathan almost looks and you're like, oh, no, not Jonathan. And after that, it's typical.
Yeah. Batman does have the moment where he's like, how's this? Is it transmitting? It's being transmitted through screens, says the bad computer. Batman's like, how many infected? Over 600 million. Wait, if it's transferred through screen, has the connection been disabled in the house?
Yeah.
No.
He disabled the Batcave, but not the house.
He honestly, fires off an electromagnetic pulse.
That's what I said. He nuked the house.
That's beautiful.
I actually expected when he came upstairs for Alfred to be infected and not Nightwing or Tim.
I think having Nightwing be the one, you know, biting him in the throat and ripping out his guts is the more shocking thing. I mean, this is his
kid. Oh, sure. This is his first son, yes.
Well, yeah. And it's the sensational character find of 1940. You know, for decade after decade after decade, Dick Grayson has been Batman's faithful steed or partner, whatever it is.
Well, the art is okay in this, right?
They're obviously doing kind of, I don't want to say a Walking Dead riff, but it's definitely got a gravitas to it. Kind of it's certainly not something that's photorealistic.
Oh, no.
But it's more realistic than your average DC comic.
I'm more than happy for it to be not photorealistic. I think comic books should be comic booky. Okay. But unfortunately, because we are post Walking Dead, because we are post Day of the Dead, because we're post Night of the Living Dead, because we're post all of that.
Yep.
I don't think you're going to be able to get away from using some of those tropes, some of those visual images that everyone knows is coming order to kind of push the story along.
The arrival of Cyborg on Earth is nearly identical to the arrival of the Sentry on Earth at the beginning of Marvel Zombies 15 years ago.
We'll get to that in another minute. Put another asterisk or dot by that or pin it or whatever. Because I thought the art was fine. I would have liked it maybe a little more cartoony. If it was a little bit more cartoony, I think we could dive into the fun of this, you know, the fun of horror. There are many published reports that talk about how screaming and being scared is actually really good for your body, right? But this kind of is just like, this isn't really, you know, fun, scary stuff. This is kind of like creepy, scary stuff, and not creepy in a, ooh, boy, I don't want that, blah, blah. No, it's more like, that's kind of awkward in places.
You know, sometimes a good, bloody, meaningless death fest where there are no consequences and you know everybody's going to die.
Right.
That can be fun.
Yes, I agree.
Herschel Gordon Lewis made an entire career out of that. I think a lot of the appeal of the Romero zombie movies is the fact that you know these people are doomed.
Yeah, and because they're, and number one, to begin with, most of the people that die in a horror movie are already horrible people to begin with. Right? So
yeah,
you kind of, in
so
some cases, especially
Batman die here.
Well, but that's especially with like Day of the Dead or Dawn of the Dead, where, you know, the most horrible people are the ones who end up getting it. And you're just waiting for the most horrible of them all to succumb. So if Batman's one of the first, then he's not one of the most horrible ones.
No, he's the most horrible.
No, because he would be the very last man standing, and it'd be like, they're coming for you, Batman.
Damien got bitten before Batman.
No, Damien didn't. That was Tim Drake.
No, it's Damien.
No, Damien's still at home with the Kents. Because at one point, Damien's like, this walkie-talkie that's supposed to work all the time suddenly isn't working, and Jonathan's trying to calm him down and go, you know, it's just probably a thing. I'm sure he's busy. I'm sure everything's all right. You can just stay with us. I've talked before about how zombie movies, I don't want to say they scare me, but zombie movies, I will have horrific zombie dreams. That's the side effect of zombie movies, because it just, I don't know what it is. This zombie apocalypse outbreak, just something about that freaks me out. Even though I doubt it would really happen unless everyone in the world suddenly went on, 600 million people went on bath salts at the same time. But this didn't do that for me. I mean, even Walking Dead in the first, you know, two arcs of Walking Dead, there's some scary stuff in that. And that stuff creeps me out. This didn't creep me out. And this wasn't a, yay, this guy got it, or yay, this guy got it. There was none of that that I felt in this issue.
I feel like part of the stakes of a true zombie horror movie is an expectation of mortality. And when you open with the Justice League fighting down a literal stone-faced god, even if that god commits suicide on panel, as he does a couple of pages later,
right,
you have an uphill battle to give me the fear that the Justice League is outmatched and that this horrible thing that's happening is going to be horrible enough to where it actually endangers the fastest man alive or Wonder Woman or Aquaman. So I feel like this is, as we've seen before, and again, asterisk.
Okay.
This is something where mixing the two genres, mixing the genre of that, you know, that power fantasy of this person is so strong, they can throw a boat right over a hedge, with this is such a terrible, terrible virus that it will attack and kill everyone, and you too will eventually succumb to this, you know. Basically, one fantasy is avoiding evil or avoiding death or fighting against, you know, whatever doom there may be.
Right.
And the other one is making that doom as absolutely inexorable as possible. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to do a zombie movie in a superhero setting, and it's hard to do superheroes in a zombie setting.
Yeah. So, you know, listeners who are listening to this are probably like, well, these guys seem pretty positive on this. So they're both going to give this a strong recommendation, and I'm going to go right out and buy it. Remember the little asterisks and the pins and the dots and the things that we said we're going to come back to?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I personally can't recommend this because from the moment that this was announced, my first reaction, and I've talked to Matthew about this multiple times, is didn't we do this in like 2006, 2008 with a thing called Darkseid War and Final Crisis? I mean, Final Crisis was all about Darkseid unleashing the anti-life equation onto people, and it was infecting them like a virus, and they were turning into zombies and turning against the heroes. And that ultimately is what led to the New Gods dying and Batman dying and going back in time and kicking off the whole Final Crisis arc. Am I missing something there? Because
this is
a story that is less than or just at a decade old, and we're already getting a reboot of it.
I think that, you know, it is important to look at not just that, not just, you know, the Black Lantern story in Darkest Night in 2009, or Marvel Zombies in 2001, or Marvel Zombies 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 9. You know, there are places where I think if you're a brand new reader and you walk into a store and you're like, oh, zombies and superheroes,
yes,
there are places where you're going to look at this and go, hey, this is amazing.
Yes. And if I were a brand new reader to comics, I've only gotten on board in the last couple of years, you know, with all these big movies that are taking over the world and comic books are cool again, then yeah, I'd probably be saying, hey, this is the new hip, the new now, the new wow, man, I've got to get me some DC zombie stuff. I sure wish DC's. Marvel would do some zombie stuff. But again, as you said, I've already read Marvel Zombies. I've read multiple iterations of Marvel Zombies. I've already read the DC's attempt at that. We've already read Darkest Night, another attempt to do a zombie horror apocalypse inside the DC universe. So now Final Night actually sold really, really well. I'm not sure that Seven Soldiers of Victory or that Mr. Miracle miniseries that Grant Morrison did leading up to Final Crisis, I don't remember if that sold super well or not. So
the Seven Soldiers sold okay, but it wasn't, I mean, it wasn't like Final Crisis.
Well, but that's what I'm wondering, if DC, you know, somebody, probably Tom Taylor, goes up and goes, oh man, I got a great idea to do Marvel, you know, DC Zombies. And they said, what, did you say Marvel Zombies? He says, no, I really meant DC Zombies. And they're like, and he's like, do you remember that book that you guys did a few years ago and it didn't sell very well? I've got a new hook on that to basically tell the same story, but different.
Well, I mean, we are three universal iterations down the run from there. I mean,
yeah, because we had 52 and now we have the new DC universe or whatever it's called.
52 and then the new 52.
Yeah.
And then we had the Rebirth, which came after that. I mean, I consider Rebirth to be essentially a revision of the DC universe. It's a revision that says, oh yeah, this new thing is actually just a continuing tributary of what's been going on since 1938. And, you know, whatever. Editorial can do what they want. That's their thing. But I feel like in so doing, bringing out this particular comic, I was struck by three important bits.
Okay.
The Justice League lineup at the beginning of this issue is the Meltzer Justice League from 2006, which is pre-New 52, pre-Flashpoint retcon.
I think these are also the Rebirth.
No, because they've got Black Lightning and Hawkwoman.
Oh, okay. They have them on the team. Okay. Because I remember, so in the animated universe right now, their Justice League formed in the same way, where it was Cyborg, Superman, Batman, Green Lantern, Flash. It was basically the Jim Lee Justice League stuff. Yeah, the New 52 stuff.
Yep. But you've got this team that feels retro, and then you've got the stuff with John and Bad Damian.
Damian, yeah.
Which is already now in the rearview mirror because of adjustments in both of their books. You've got a point where this book is calling on multiple levels of continuity and multiple points in the continuity. And by the way, Desaad, for some reason throughout this issue, is a Dominator.
Yeah, that's really weird.
That is really weird. And unless that's a new design for the New 52 Desaad that I didn't know about, which is entirely possible.
And he's not really a Dominator, but he has those fangly teeth that the Dominators have.
And he's got and the big squinty giant eyes. Red eyes and the you know, elongated face. But yeah. If that's the case, that's fine. But my biggest issue with this is not so much that it is overly familiar, which it is, or that it's been, you know, really kind of driven into the ground. We're probably in the 15th year of, hey, what about X with zombies? But that's not necessarily a deal breaker either. I feel like my biggest issue with this is the feeling throughout where they are not willing to commit to one side or the other. We get, like, you know, and you and I have discussed this already, we get a sequence where Desaad cuts out Cyborg's tongue. This is a terrifying, horrible moment. And if this were a Rob Zombie flick, they would lean into that and they'd show you Tom Savini's rubber cyborg head and just boom.
You know, I don't... And go ahead.
I feel like if this book is trying to one up the blood and the gore of something like, you know, a Marvel Zombies, or trying to give us a new take on that Final Crisis or Dark Side War or even, you know, Blackest Night, but they're trying to do it now, instead of showing us a scary Romero movie, they're going to show us a Herschel Gordon Lewis Bloodfest movie. That's fine. That's something at least different. But there's a couple of times in here, the last page is, you know, a big, scary, terrifying moment, and it's filled with blood and gore and, you know, Batman's entrails. Well, not literally his entrails.
No, it's like his neck and chest are being ripped open and everything.
His flesh and fascia are being ripped open, and Nightwing's face is half torn off. And it's just, I mean, it's a big moment, but why would you do the weird pull away moment? Why would you shy away from
that? I have a theory on that. Two theories, that? Actually. The first theory is, as you said, the last page on this is super shocker, right? But if you do super shocking at the beginning of literally getting in there close as his tongue is being ripped out, you kind of lose some of the impact about where the rest of the book is going, right? So you get to a part where
you're saving it for your big money.
Yeah, you're saving it for your big money shots. And because, to be honest, the tongue getting ripped out is like, okay, whatever. You're showing it off panel, or you're kind of showing it from a wide shot. That's fine. I can get behind that. But then you go a page later and literally Darkseid's head is exploding open. I'm like, holy crap, did that guy just rip his head open? And before you really can comprehend that, he's leaping into the fire pits of Apocalypse and blowing up. And then the madness starts happening and the pictures and the gore starts to get more intense and more intense and more intense until you get to that part where, oh my God, Batman is being eaten by his own son. And so that's, I think, the only full page. I mean, that's a full page close up that closes out that issue. And it is in your face and letting you know, man, we're serious about that. So part of me wants to say, OK, this is intentional. Let's do a slow build to the gore violence so that by the time you hit the end, you are gobsmacked over how crazy this event is going to be. Mm-hmm. Other part of me is maybe the artist just maybe the artist just wasn't doing what he thought he should do, or didn't interpret the writer's directions well.
I don't think
that's an editorial decision. I honestly think that this is something that either the artist didn't have the capabilities, which, thinking about my first argument, I really think that they were letting that build up through the story.
That's possible. I mean, it's definitely a valid take on it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Hercein as an artist does some interesting stuff. And I feel like you look at
aren't there three different artists on this?
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's does it change, or is it a pencil or an inker?
Let I don't know. I'd have to double check on that. I just remember as I was doing this, I was like, oh, there's three artists on this. Are we going to really see the difference in this? Right. And I was like, I don't know. And then I really wasn't paying attention because, you know, Darkseid ripped his freaking head off.
James Herron is a different artist, and he does pages 7 through 14.
Yeah.
Which are that's the sequence on Apocalypse.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah. Yes. But Trevor Hercein, who does the primary hunk of this book.
Okay.
Does really good buildings and backgrounds, does really good textures and costumes. And all of his facial expressions are just like sketchy nonsense. And there's a close-up of Superman's face that I think is supposed to be this look of dawning horror. And it's just like dull surprise. it's like, oh, no, you guys, these bad things happen. And throughout the issue, we keep getting these moments that are meant to be emotionally awesome. You know, the sequence of the EMP going off and Wayne Manor going dark, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it really is nice.
It's immediately followed by several shots of Damian Wayne going, oh, no, is my dad dead?
Yeah.
Dull surprise.
Yeah.
So,
well, maybe because Superman's known it all. He was like, you know, I sang at the end of the universe and made this all come back and be different. So maybe this isn't a surprise to him.
Final Crisis in the... How dare you?
No, I'm serious. We've already mentioned it once. We already mentioned Darkest Night once. That's the other thing, that we really don't know what universe this is supposed to be taking place in. This doesn't take place in the Rebirth universe.
It does not have a DC Universe logo on the cover. So I think that this is going to have to be something that we take on its own world.
Well, I think that is what carries back to a comment you made earlier about, you know, how we've seen this continuity, or we've seen these stories before, and what continuity is this? And that makes me remember what Diane Nelson, who was the former head of DC and kind of gave them directions before she was let go. She had come out and said, we're not really worrying about continuity anymore at DC Comics. We're just here to tell great stories. And if there's going to be continuity,
when does that start?
Well, I mean, one can argue one way or another. Is this an interesting story?
That was incredibly cynical and douchey. I retract that comment.
I mean, one can look at this, and if I was a new reader, I would look at this and go, wow, this is really good. This has some really positive, interesting story hooks. It's got some jump scares. It's got some tension that's built into it. So from the writing and the art, it is a good book. It's not a great book. It's not a very fine book. It's a good book. It's a good middle-of-the-road book.
And so
yeah, and for a middle of the road or a new reader, I would think that this might be something you pick up. But for old codgers like you and me, who have been there before, who have been down this road and danced this dance and sang this song,
rocking the line.
This is just not. I don't like this, and it's not because I have anything against people doing something different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like this because I've already seen this. I've already seen DC do its answer to Marvel Zombies when it did the lead up to Final Crisis. And when it did Final Crisis, the first arc in that, where the world came to an end, I've already seen that. I don't need to see it again. The attempt wasn't good the first time. And to just say, hey, remember how we screwed up the first time? We're going to do it again. And maybe we won't screw up, as opposed to, I don't know what another answer could be, but I just didn't care for this. I just didn't care for this story. I don't care about this. And yet DC is really pumping this as you've never seen anything like this before. And that's an absolute falsehood.
Agreed. And my complaint, and this is my big complaint, is if you're going to try and tell a horror story, you have to be willing to use the tools. You have to use the tricks of the trade. So if you're going to give me something like, you know, an Eli Roth film, if you're going to lean into Saw 16 or Saw New 52, whatever it is going to be, I want to see you do something with that. And granted, this is a first issue. And the first chapter of, is this a 6-issue or 12-issue limited?
I have no idea. I'm not going to read it past this, to be honest.
Nor am I. But I think that this is the first chapter of something. So yeah, they had some world building to do. But the thing that's frustrating to me is we don't, I mean, yes, I know Batman, I know Superman, but we don't get a whole lot of time spent on, hey, this is why Superman is, to, or here's Superman's wife, and why is this specific? It just feels very remote. It feels like, you guys know all this, this is just the trappings. We really want to get to the blood and the guts of the gore.
Yeah, yeah.
But then they don't lean hard enough into the blood and the guts and the gore for me. I mean,
well, and that's, and you bring that up because it's funny, because they don't really establish, they really don't establish Cyborg in this piece. Because, you know, he gets his tongue ripped out, and then like a page later, it says something to the effect that Vic Sage's tongue grew back because of his technology. I'm like, wait, I never knew his technology had the ability to make him regrow organs.
He's a zombie now. He's a zombie.
But still, why does it grow back? I didn't know his body could do that.
Cyborg's powers have been nebulous. He's been, you know.
Yeah, they don't explain. So here's the bottom line for me. If you are a new comic book reader and you've only gotten into comics in the last 4 years, sure, go pick this up. Go spend $3.99 on this book. It's got some pretty pictures. It's got an interesting story. If you are someone who's been in comics for longer than 5 years, okay, 6 years. No, seriously, if you go back to 2008, if you read Darkest Night, if you've been around long enough to have read Darkest Night, you don't need to read this.
Mm. I agree. And I think that perhaps the book's biggest flaw is the fact that it's being pimped as this huge world changing, you know, game changing, the end of everything story. And what it is it's another Elseworlds. And you know what? If it had been, if it had come to us and it said Elseworlds,
yeah,
I think I would have appreciated it more. But once again, I think that if you are going to tell this story, you have to either establish that these are superheroes and they're stronger than a zombie movie and that something's going to happen, or that the zombie tropes will work even in a superhero movie. And instead of that, they just sort of awkwardly welded them together and created sort of an Oldsmobile of story that doesn't really work for me, and it doesn't go far enough or fast enough. And, you know, I'm not saying I wanted a bloodier, more terrifying comic. I'm not saying I wanted to see, you know, John Kent rip Damian Wayne to pieces on the page, which they still may. It's entirely possible that that will happen. I'm just saying that if you are going to sell me this story as a game-changing horror thing, then don't give me this mealy-mouthed, it's still a superhero story nonsense. And I feel like, you know, this is a book where Big Barda is in it for like 5 seconds.
Right.
You didn't even have any awesome Big Barda moments. What are you guys doing?
Yeah, maybe that's set up for later down the road. Here's what I think I just figured out.
What did you figure out?
Why this doesn't hit for me.
Okay.
If we look at The Walking Dead, how does The Walking Dead start? What's the very first thing we see in The Walking Dead?
Rick in a hospital bed.
And what has happened?
We don't know.
Exactly. All we know is that there's a zombie outbreak. How did Marvel Zombies come about?
We don't know.
Well, actually, we do, because the Fantastic Four and Ultimate Fantastic Four went to the zombie universe, or opened up a doorway to a zombie universe, and the zombie Reed Richards was like, I'm going to figure out a way to get out of here. And
the frightful four came to eat his face.
Yeah, and then he did. And then that's how the zombie outbreak started. But when it really started, you're right, it was Hyperion or whoever falling from the sky.
Sentry.
And infecting everyone here.
Yeah, I don't trust the Sentry.
Here, they're telling us every step of the way of why and how the zombie outbreak has started.
Yes. Yes. They are doing it as though it's a standard superhero story. And they're just like, and here's this, and here's this, and this is how it happened and why it happened.
Yeah. And we don't need that. I mean, the great part about the zombie genre is, we don't know how they started. I mean, in Night of the Living Dead, we kind of know something about a satellite, but we don't know what's going on with that satellite.
Right. And
it's not until the final 30 seconds of Maximum Overdrive that we find out that the trucks have been infected by a UFO that's been flying around the planet for the last 6 months.
In their defense, there is a scroll at the beginning that says the satellite Rhea was showing up in space. And then this happens. But yeah. I actually think that is an astute observation, because they say, and when I say they, I mean I, but, you know, you have heard it said a million times, nothing is scarier. Things that you have to imagine, things that are mysterious and weird and strange and, you know, dark, shadowy figures in your backyard, tall men with
dark
no
shadows.
Faces. Yeah. Those are scary because your mind has to fill in the blanks.
Yes.
And this book,
especially when you're doing horror, you have
away
to do that.
From you.
Yes. If you're doing horror, you have to do that.
Well, you don't have to, but it's definitely one of the strong ways to start a horror story.
Well,
and in this case, I think that it damages this story that it is so linear. And so here's issue one of our crossover Crisis on Infinite Dead People.
Well, but even if you look at Scream, the very first Scream movie, where they're telling you, here's why horror, here's all the horror tropes that you're going to see. And sure enough, one by one, it all transpires. But at that very opening scene, you see Drew Barrymore on the phone with her boyfriend, and suddenly she's attacked and she's dead before the first act is even over. And you're like, what is this? I really am not getting that from anything. Now, my guess is, I don't know what's going to happen in Deceased number two, but it wouldn't surprise me if the next issue starts 6 months later.
What's your favorite scary movie, Steven? Cabbage Patch Kids?
No, not the Cabbage Patch Kids. Those things are creepy as hell.
Have you ever seen the Oogie Love, Steven?
The Oogie Love? God, I hope not.
Yeah, Oogie Loves is a terrible movie. Don't watch it.
So
I did not make that up either. Don't even.
No, that's okay.
Don't even.
That's okay. I've seen the one about the toilet monsters.
That's Ghoulies, and Ghoulies. That's fun.
See? Anyway, we landed at Deceased number one, all thanks to you, our dear listeners, or more importantly, those of you who went over. No. More importantly, those of you who took the time to head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers and tell us what comic you wanted to read next week. Now, what are we going to read next week? Well, Matthew, I'm going to read a list of comics and then you're going to tell them what they need to do after that. So next week from Boom Studios, we have By Night, number 11 of 12, the penultimate issue there. Ronin Island, number 3. Ooh, good series there. Dark Horse Comics has Black Hammer, Age of Doom, number 10. Weird or Word, W-Y-R-D, number 3. Let's see. DC Comics has Batman and the Outsiders, number 1. That one actually looks kind of interesting. There's a Batman Animated Grey Ghost. Oh, that's the action figure, $28. That's one of those. They're not 6-scale. I don't know what size they are. They're not the 6-inch figures, but they're really big. And I would not mind having a Batman animated ghost, Grey Ghost action figure. That'd be pretty cool. But also next week, Catwoman number 11, Detective Comics 1003, Flash number 7, Red Hood and the Outlaw, or I guess it Red Hood Outlaw number 34, Shazam number 5, and Wonder Woman number 70 arrive next week from DC Comics. Over at Dynamite Entertainment, we have Betty Page number 4. What is this? Hack Slash versus Chaos number 5, James Bond Origin number 9, and Red Sonja Vampirilla, Betty and Veronica number 1. Oh my God, the craziness that's going on there. Oh,
Superman versus Batman versus Archie versus Punisher.
That would actually make sense. IDW Publishing next week has Atomic Robo and the Dawn of the New Era number 5 of 5, Samurai Jack, Lost Worlds number 1. Sonic the Hedgehog, number 16. You might want to start getting those comic books now ahead of the big movie. So because you know, as soon as that movie hits, Matthew, the price of Sonic comics is going to just shoot through the roof. Image Comics has Curse Words, number 21. Die, Die, Die. Oh, there's a Die, Die, Die action figure 2-pack. What? That's a $60 value right there.
Well, yeah, one of the two, it's a 2-pack is Die, and then Die's Sid. Kid yeah. Sidekick, Die Die.
Have you been reading the new Hit Girl series over there at Image Comics? Kevin Smith writing this one.
I read the first issue of the season one of Hit Girl, and I went, no, thank you.
Hit Girl season 2, number 4, arrives next week, as does Murder Falcon, number 8, and Section Zero, number 2. Marvel
Wasn't
Comics.
Murder Falcon that Saturday night to show that came on after Dynasty?
All I know is Eagle Bones Falcon Hawk, who is the lead guitarist for Aquabats.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. Marvel Comics has Age of Conan, Belit, number 3. Avengers, let's see. We got a poster, Avengers, a poster, Captain Marvel, number 5. We've got a Friendly Neighborhood, Spider-Man, number 6. Marvel's Annotated, number 3. And I didn't realize Marvel's annotated actually has the script along with it, not just the notes. Right. So this is something I think people might want to pick up if you love the Kurt Busiek, Adam Hughes Marvel's series from back in the
90s. Alex Ross.
You really want to pick that up.
It's a good book.
Yeah. Star Wars Age of the Republic, Boba Fett, number one.
Boba Fett.
Symbiote Spider-Man, number two. And War of the Realms Journey into Mystery, number two, come out next week from Marvel Comics. In all the rest category, Archie, number 704, Betty and Veronica, number five, Cavewoman, Cabot's Club One-Shot. I don't know what that is. I don't think I want to know. There's
Sounds
also
dirty.
Hell Child, Blood Money, number two, and Long Con, number nine. That's still going on. That's a end-of-the-world story set at a comic book convention. Shades of Magic, number five, The Three Stooges, Astro Nuts, number one. There's a cheese cover by Eric Shanover. Shanauer. So if you want a cheese cover, go get that.
Cheese cover? Not
yes.
A cheesecake cover.
No, it just says cheese cover. It's the Three Stooges. I wouldn't want to see a Cheesecake Three Stooges cover.
It's probably a Shemp cover then.
Finally, we round out our list this week with Zoo Hunters, number four.
So all of that list clearly sounds like it could have some wonderful, some compelling comic stuff. And if you heard something you want, or if you're looking at the list right now, at Major Spoilers, you know, patreon.com/majorspoilers. You can go ahead and comment. Dueling Review for May 8th, 2019 is currently up at our Patreon page. You can tell us what you want to see. And if you say, hey, this is a comic that I really want to hear you guys read, that's wonderful. If you say, hey, this is a terrible comic and I think that it would torture you, that's just mean, but it's also cool. Whatever it is that you want to see, go ahead and use the comment section. And as long as nobody else tries to steal it out from under us, that will be next week's Dueling Review. Well, and of course, if everyone else agrees with you. So, you know, tell two friends and they'll tell two friends and so on. And eventually it'll be a wonderful, endless Dueling Review. It'll be like social media and then we'll all become zombies.
Oh, don't do that. Hey, thank you, everybody, for checking out this week's Dueling Review. And thank you for everyone who is a patron and supporting us over at patreon.com. Your contribution allows us to keep this show going, pay for our growing costs, and gives us the motivation to produce more content just for you each and every week. Also, when you're over there at Patreon, not only do you get to pick the next comic book, there is a bunch of bonus stuff, including prints that come your way, T-shirts, membership cards, bonus episodes, so much more over there at patreon.com. Thanks so much for checking out Dueling Review, and we will talk with you next time when you will hear Matthew say,
it is wrong to tip the vessel of knowledge, Ed Gruberman.
This podcast is copyright 2019 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.